Is there anything here that shouldn't be, particularly on the expense side? And then the other question is there something not here that should be? You know, in other words, are there expenses that you would expect to be in this business that you're not seeing anywhere? And maybe they financed it personally for whatever reason. And so it's, you're really looking for those two types of anomalies and just asking questions and make sure you understand it.
Welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Since 2007, Quiet Light Brokerage has been helping thousands of online entrepreneurs realize their dream of buying and selling online businesses. And now, we're bringing all the knowledge our team has acquired straight to you. No matter your niche or industry, these lessons, tips, and strategies will help you build, grow, acquire, or sell your online businesses better. And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Joe, a few years ago, I had a couple of experts. I had a call with a couple of experts for a way to buy a business called ROBS, right? Rollover for Business Startups. It's kind of an unknown or pretty little known way of financing a purchase and mixed up in a lot of red tape and everything else, but is it a viable option to be able to buy a business and run a business and finance that purchase outside of kind of the traditional spend cash or SBA loan? I know you and I are starting up this new series within the Quiet Light Podcast called Incredible Acquisitions. We don't have a great schedule for it yet, but this is the first installment of that episode, and I'm excited because you got somebody who made an incredible acquisition, thus the name, using ROBS.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's an interesting one because the individual behind the purchase, a guy named Rick, he's about 50 years old, very mature, high-level CFO in public corporations. So he knows his stuff. He gets the numbers. He understands it. And so it's not a light decision that he decided to go with the ROBS. He was going to do an SBA, but he and his wife, who's a CPA, decided the best approach for them would be a ROB. And they purchased Gunskins, closed, I want to say about 9 months ago. And we talk about his search. We talk about his due diligence process. We talk about his takeover, what training and transition was like, and now whether or not it's a family-run business.
Yeah, this Incredible Acquisitions is really everything soup to nuts about doing an acquisition from people that have actually done an acquisition and hopefully being able to give some insight, especially to first-time acquirers or fifth time, right? Because there's more than one way to go about this. So I love the fact that this is a family-run business, not just because I'm a family guy, but his son is doing customer service.
And he's 14 years old. That's right. It's amazing. Well, he's not picking up the phone. It's all, let's go back. I launched this business, or I was going to launch it. I think I did, maybe I did just before Christmas of 17. And the guy that owned the business was overpaying his brother dramatically. And my advice was to let his brother go. I was the Grinch before Christmas. Remember
that?
Yeah,
we had, I remember that. I called you all sorts of names on the podcast.
You did. And so did his brother off the podcast. But we worked it out. We did an adjustment that just was logical, mathematical, and it made sense. And, you know, it turned out that the brother stayed on during the transition and training period. And then literally the 14-year-old spends about 5 to 10 minutes a day doing customer service by just choosing the autoresponder in the chat link. So it's great. It's a great story. And I think it's great to hear buyers talk about their process and what they did to purchase a business and then to have some pretty amazing growth along the way, which is a good part of what he talks about.
All right. I got a quick message for the listeners here of the podcast. We've been doing this now for about a year and a half, less than a year and a half. But we have a lot of episodes, and I spent some time recently going over what you guys have actually listened to and responded to. This Incredible Acquisitions is something that we're trying new. It's not something that we're going to be able to do every week. But listen to this episode and send me an email, mark@quietlightbrokerage.com. Let me know what you think. Do you want more episodes like this? We're trying to be a bit more intentional this year about the guests that we bring on to be able to feed what you guys want to hear. So let us know. Is this right up your alley? Or do you want us to continue bringing on experts that specialize in PPC or whatever? We're going to still have some of those guests. Let us know. Let's get into the today's episode of Incredible Acquisitions from Rick and hear this awesome story.
Hey, folks. It's Joe Valley from Quiet Light Brokerage. And today I have a client on the phone. Actually, it's a buyer. We're starting the Incredible series in 2019, and this is the first of Incredible acquisitions. I have Rick on the line. We're not going to actually share Rick's name for confidentiality purposes, but Rick, how are you today?
I'm doing good, Joe. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. We are going to talk about the site that you bought. We're going to share that. We're going to share a lot of information. Let's start first, though, with a little bit of your background. What was your professional life, and what is your professional life now that you own an e-commerce business?
Sure. That's a great question. You know, I graduated from college with a degree in business, specifically in accounting. Spent a good chunk of my career working for public accounting firms, and then over the last 15 or so years, I've been a financial executive for, you know, mid-sized companies, companies as large as $1 billion in revenue.
And sounds like you're about the same age as me. Do you mind sharing how old you are so the folks out there that are in the same boat can connect?
Yeah, no problem at all. I turned 50 this year, so it was a big year for me.
Well, happy birthday in 2018. Good for you. It's a big number, that's for sure. All right. So you were in the corporate world, and at one point you said, all right, I'm thinking I want to get into the online world, spend a little bit more time with family and friends. Was that the goal and objective?
Yeah. I mean, it started off with, look, I'd like to diversify where my income streams are coming from. And my wife and I over the years have done many, many passive investments in real estate, in the stock market, like many people have. And we're really looking for something that was going to be, that we could be a little more actively involved and engaged with. And at the start, you know, I wasn't at all convinced that I needed to, you know, throw my pencil down, so to speak, and run out of the corporate world. I was just simply looking for another source of income that would keep me active when I wasn't sitting at my desk.
I'm recalling now that your wife is a CPA or something along those lines, right?
Yeah. We're both CPAs. We met in the world of public accounting, and as you might imagine, we have a stimulating dinner conversation about CPA things.
Okay, so for those out there that own online businesses and are thinking maybe I want to exit someday, Rick and his wife are the caliber of buyers that we're going to bring to the table. They're CPAs. They understand financial documents. So as always, get your financials in good shape because someone's going to comb through them in great, great detail. All right, let's jump into a little bit about your process of searching for a business. How long did it take you and what approach did you take?
Yeah, it took, I got to think about this. I'm going to say, we probably were looking for at least 18 months, maybe 2 years. And, you know, started off quite broad. And we were looking at everything, you know, not just e-commerce, but also brick and mortar opportunities ranging from franchises to mom and pop businesses, et cetera. And, you know, as we learned more and we looked at more businesses, and this is something I can't emphasize enough, is it's really important to look at a lot of businesses. There's no cost to doing that as a prospective buyer, and you learn a ton. You learn, you know, how folks are doing things right, and maybe, you know, how folks are, you know, some things you might want to avoid. And so we looked at a ton of different businesses. Ultimately, became convinced that the e-com was the way to go for us for a variety of different reasons. I continue to be amazed by the tools and resources that are available to e-commerce businesses and the low overhead, low touch nature of e-commerce businesses. And that was really attractive to us. We were real about it. We knew that we weren't just going to buy something and then it was going to, you know, magically grow on its own and increase revenues. But on the other hand, we wanted to use the tools and resources available to run that business as efficiently as possible.
And yeah, a couple of things there that you're repeating. So thank you. I say it all the time and I feel like, you know, I could pound my hand on my desk or my head occasionally, that looking for a long time. Finding a great business, and I think you bought one of the great ones. Finding a great one is like looking for a needle in a haystack inside of a ginormous haystack. So it's doubly hard. The more you look at, right, you look for a year and a half, the more you look at, the more you knew the right fit when it came along. and you were able to act quickly. Now, when we talk about look at them, you're not just looking at the listing online and saying, yeah, that sounds good, or no, that doesn't sound good. You're digging in and looking at the full details of a business listing, right? All the way down into the financials.
Yeah, absolutely. And you guys at Quiet Light make it really easy to do that. You know, you sign, I think it's still this way anyway, you sign an NDA on the front end, and then as you guys post listings and send out emails or put them on your site, you know, all I have to do is click a button to receive that information. And, you know, I think it's important to have the courtesy to follow up with the broker and let them know, you know, what you thought of the business and whether you want to move anything forward. But just the ability and the ease with which you can do that, get the information, look at it, and start to learn about the business and about e-commerce in general is amazing. And there's, I'm sure there's some other brokers out there that operate similarly, but I found your, you know, Quiet Light's process to be very clean and easy in that regard. It, you know, for a prospective buyer, it's, you make it easy to look at businesses, which is great.
And just for clarification purposes, I'm not paying you to say that or give you any kind of discount on the commission, correct?
No, not yet. Maybe we'll circle back to that.
Maybe someday. I'll buy you a cup of coffee. How's that? At what point did you narrow your focus from, you know, everything in the possible, you know, entrepreneurial world to physical product e-commerce? As e-commerce can be a broad term, meaning anything sold online, but you narrowed into physical products. At what point did you make that decision? Was it simply because you came from the CPA world and it just made sense and you were comfortable with it and not necessarily SaaS or content development?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. And I would say that there's a step before that. Before I narrowed it to physical products, I narrowed it to, initially I was looking at any and all businesses that had, you know, that were the right size and had the right cash flow that I was looking for. And my first narrowing process was really to say, okay, I need, if I'm going to do this, it needs to be something I'm actually interested in. And initially, you know, we were looking at everything from, you know, e-commerce businesses that sold, you know, ballet tutus and, you know, other ones that sold, you know, toilet products and so forth and so on. And that may well be interesting to somebody. It wasn't that interesting to me. And that's where I said, okay, I need to narrow this up a little bit and make sure that if I'm going to move forward with something, it's something that I actually have some passion around. So that's number one. You know, as far as products, I don't know that was a real conscious decision on my part, but we did just sort of gravitate that way. And that's what appealed to us. And I would say, you know, as we got closer actually to pulling the trigger and moving forward on an LOI, we found ourselves looking more and more at product companies. It just is what suited us. It's not to say that SaaS or something else that's something we would definitely consider, but for whatever reason, we just trended towards products.
Gotcha. Well, I want to get into the business itself that you bought, but before we get there and talk about that particular business, can you, you know, one of the things we always talk about is sort of get all your ducks in a row. And you and your wife had determined how you were going to finance and purchase this business. Can you touch on that briefly? Because we did not do an SBA loan in this situation, and it was a little creative. Go ahead and talk about that for just a moment.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to, because I think it was a really good solution for us. We actually started down the SBA route. We got SBA approval. You've got a great contact with Steven Spear at Bank United, who's a great guy, and it was a smooth approval process. We were sitting there, we had it ready to go, and the more my wife and I started looking at it and thinking about it, it's like, well, gosh, you know, I've been working as an executive for, you know, over 20 years, and over the years, we've put some money into 401ks, both of us, and that's sitting there idle, or not idle, but it's in mutual funds and the stock market and so forth, basically passive investments. And we ran across a program that the IRS created called the ROBS program, R-O-B-S, and it stands for Rollover Business Startup. And there's a company, first of all, you need an advisor to do this, but there's a company called Guidant Financial in Bellevue, Washington that we work with that are very professional and have a very good process to kind of help you through a Rob's financing. But essentially what you do is you use your 401k money to purchase the business, the target. And what the real beauty of the Rob's program from my perspective is that, one, I can take that money that's invested in the stock market that I have less control over, I can put it into a business that I have complete control over, and as dividends are paid out, or when I exit this business, those proceeds go, or those dividends go tax-free back into our 401k. And we don't get taxed on that until we start drawing on it for retirement, which is outstanding. So it was creative, and I'm glad we stumbled upon it. It's been really good for us.
It's a beautiful thing. Mark here at Quiet Light wrote an article on it. So folks, if you Google Rob's and Quiet Light Brokerage, the article will come up in Google, and you'll be able to figure that out and take a look. And of course, you can Google Guidant Financial as well. They're quite well known in the space. Okay, so let's talk about this particular business. It's rare, in my experience, and I've been doing this since 2012, that we get a listing that has a utility patent on it. When this one came across my desk, it was kind of special. Not only did it have a utility patent for a SKU that was generating about 40% of the revenues, but it also had the majority of the revenue coming from its own Shopify store, which is in contrast to what we see with a lot of physical-based e-commerce businesses these days when they're selling on Amazon as well. Amazon is just growing so quickly that no matter how much they try to build their Shopify, Amazon eats up a larger percentage. So what was it about this listing? And it was called Gun Skins. I like to call it Stickers for Guns. What was it about this one that stood out to you right away?
Well, first of all, we don't refer to them as stickers. They're high quality, high performance vinyl. It's the same vinyl that that folks put on cars and trucks and buses and so forth. It's in boats too. I've seen boats wrapped. But what it is it's a protective camouflage wrap for your gun. Now there are products out there like Cerakote or solutions like hydro dipping that allow you to either camouflage, protect, and or dress up your gun. You know, most guns are your standard black. And both hydro dipping and Cerakote allow you to do something similar to what we're doing with vinyl. The difference is that those processes are both fairly technical, they're fairly expensive, and they're also basically permanent. So you got to really like whatever it is, whatever pattern you're putting on your gun, because you're going to live with it as long as you own that gun.
Right.
Our product is a vinyl wrap. It's a 3M vinyl. Again, the same vinyl they put on cars, trucks, buses, etc. And it's a do-it-yourself solution. Our prices range from $10.99 to a high of $64.99. It can generally be applied in 2 hours or less to your gun. And getting back to your point, Joe, the patent, the founder of Gun Skins applied for and received a patent related to the vinyl kit, the template that he created for the AR-15. And we happen to make vinyl wraps for a variety of different guns, from pistols to rifles, shotguns, AR-15s, AK-47s, et cetera. But he received a patent specific to the AR-15, which was pretty cool. And so, yeah, that's the product.
Was it the product category that stood out, or the price point of the business with the discretionary earnings and the multiple, or the utility patent, or it was a utility patent, not a design patent, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So was it that stood out that made you go, okay, this is one I'm passionate about, or maybe the category itself, because I believe you're a hunter too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not necessarily a gun nut. I have many friends who are, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I've hunted and shot most of my life, and so that was attractive. There was a number of things that were attractive about this business, and a number of boxes that this business checked in terms of what I was looking for. We were looking for, something that had strong growth potential, that had multiple sales channels, which this one does. You know, we sell on Amazon, we sell through our own website on Shopify. We have eBay, Walmart, Etsy, believe it or not. And they also have multiple SKUs. So that's another box. And probably most importantly, you know, we were looking for a business that had a good foundation. And by that, I mean that it was built in such a way as to, you know, it's got good processes, processes that are relatively simple, but also well-documented and scalable. And the other adjective I guess I would add to that is portability. So, you know, it was very easy for us. I mean, I didn't have any previous e-commerce experience outside of my own experience as a consumer to come in and get our hands around this business, understand it very quickly. That's not to say the learning curve wasn't steep. It was quite steep, and we expected that. But the founder of the business just did a really good job setting it up. That's the number one biggest factor. The other things are boxes I need to check, like interest in the category and the patent and things like that.
Right.
But the number one box for us was, you know, this thing has good bones to it. We're dealing with a seller that has that's trustworthy and has high integrity. And by the way, you know, and again, I'm not being paid for this, but also a broker that has those same characteristics, particularly on your first e-commerce purchase. I think that we could go and find our way a little bit easier now, having gone through what we've gone through in terms of the acquisition and running this business. That wouldn't be as important, but on the first purchase, I think it's critical because you feel good about the seller. You got to feel good about the broker. And if you don't, I wouldn't do the deal, frankly.
I agree. We've got a big thing here at Quietlet that is follow your gut, and you've got to. You're putting a great deal of your life savings on the line, and you might only have one chance, and you want to get it right. So, you know, for the business owners out there, what Rick is saying is that who you are matters a great deal. You want to get yourself put together. You want to get those financials in great shape. You want to be a professional. You want to be somebody that you would buy a business for. There's a lot more to it than just those gross revenue numbers and trends. The person behind the business is often what I see makes the difference in the sale or not. And believe it or not, in a 3.0 multiple to a 3.2 multiple, you do make a difference. On that point though, Rick, this was a good strong multiple. We went out at 3.5 times. I believe gosh, was there any negotiation on the price, folks? I didn't look this up before we decided to
record. We came down just a little bit, but yeah, it was a 3+ multiple.
Yeah, I think we went out at 3.5 and it was pretty darn close. We're not going to talk actual numbers. We'll just talk those numbers. We'll talk dollars. But did you look at many listings that were in that multiple range before making a decision on this one? Or did you go, oh, wow, that's high, I need to look anyway? What was your initial response to the multiple?
Yeah, well, my initial response was, wow, that's high, you know, and but it was an interesting business. And as I dug into it, it's like, okay, I mean, and as I started checking off those boxes that I was talking about, it's like, okay, well, maybe this is justified. And as I went through the diligence process, I could see where there was opportunity. I think that the founder and the owner, you know, he's a brilliant guy. He created this idea. He created this business. He built the foundation, you know, but, you know, everybody that comes to the table brings with them a different set of skills. And when I was looking at it through my eyes, I thought, okay, well, I can do, you know, X, Y, and Z. And I think leverage this opportunity that much more. So yeah, you know, my initial reaction was that's high. I ultimately got comfortable with it. And it was the right deal for us.
Yeah,
for sure.
The valuation process, I think, you know, with this particular listing, because it was mostly Shopify, 60%, 70% Shopify at the time, they get to own their own customers, more value. It had a 3+ year track record, more value. It had a patent, and 40% of the revenue came from that SKU that the patent was on, more value. The lower the risk, the higher the multiple. And in this case, there were multiple conference calls. I cannot recall if there are multiple offers. Again, I didn't really prepare for this. I just wanted to be a casual conversation.
You told me there were, so I
assume. Well, there you go. So you remember, I don't. See, yeah. I've done 20 deals. Now, I wouldn't lie. I mean, the reality is that, we're going to be forthright and honest with every single person we work with. So even at that 3.5, my point, everyone, is that sometimes the first thing you look at is the multiple, and then you make your decision. And that's not always the best choice. In this case with Rick, you've had what, 20% month over month growth since you bought the business?
Yeah.
Okay. So simple math is, and go ahead, double check it up for me. But if you've got a business listed at a 4x multiple, you buy it at a 4x multiple, and you've got 25% year over year growth, and that sticks after you buy the business, you're going to make your money back in 2.7 years. In Rick's case, that's going to go down dramatically because of that 20% month over month growth, and the multiple is a little lower than that at 3.5-ish times, maybe a little bit lower. All right, so let's talk quickly about due diligence. We only had one snafu in due diligence, and that was the question, I think, about when a business owner, writes things off that are personal and they put them down as, let's say, office supplies, which I think was the case here. You being the CPA, your wife being the CPA, you got an export of all of the expenses on the American Express or Visa credit card, and literally went down through every expense and said, well, why is it that this trip to Staples is a personal expense? Because what we did, folks, is, instead of making Kevin, the seller, go back and recategorize every single thing that were office supplies, I said, okay, these are normally personal expenses because Kevin worked from home. If any of you saw the listing and watched the video, if you remember Rick, I think he was building his house and he shot it on his, we interviewed him and he had his iPhone and he did the circular view and mountains in the distance in the background. And yeah, it was beautiful, beautiful, but very casual. Work from home, the expenses were, clearly mostly personal. But we went down through them item by item, or you and your wife did, and we had to work on that negotiation a little bit, and we worked it out ultimately. But your due diligence process was pretty thorough right down to that level, right?
Yeah, it was. And our approach was really to grab the P&L that you and Kevin had put together and go line by line and understand, what was in each one of those categories and look at different fluctuations and variances month to month or year over year or quarter over quarter. And there's really two questions you're asking yourself as you do something like that. One is there anything here that shouldn't be, particularly on the expense side? And then the other question is there something not here that should be? In other words, are there expenses that you would expect to be in this business that you're not seeing anywhere? And maybe they financed it personally for whatever reason. And so you're really looking for those two types of anomalies and just asking questions and make sure you understand
them. Right. Right, for sure. Okay, so we got through due diligence. We moved on to the asset purchase agreements and then closed. Can you recall the time it took roughly from the letter of intent to closing with the ROBS program that you were involved with?
It wasn't bad. It's like anything in life. It comes down to organization, both theirs and ours. By theirs, I mean guidance, our advisor that helped us through that process. They have a highly structured, organized process. And if you follow their process, they will help you be organized as well, and it'll go pretty smoothly. I would say, I think it was, well, I don't remember, Joe. I'm going to say 45 days.
That sounds about right. This is in effect a cash deal, a non-SBA deal. Cash deals take anywhere from 30 to 45 days to close. SBA, you're going to add another 30 to 45 days. You did disappear for a little while on us there. You went silent on me, if you recall. And that was just an incredible job opportunity for you that you took and had to get that going and relocate briefly and make it work. And you still managed to juggle that and due diligence and getting the business closed and eventually take over. So let's talk about that. We closed And then there's the training and transition period, where generally it's up to 40 hours over the first 90 days after closing. Talk briefly about the first few days and what it was like for you and your wife to take over the business from Kevin.
Well, sure. And just to go back very briefly, Joe, on what we were struggling with, and you said I went silent a little bit on you. That's true. And what we were struggling with was, gosh, this business is big enough and has enough potential. Is this what you know, we want to commit ourselves to do and forget, you know, forget me going to, you know, the corporate job? And I struggled with that. And, you know, I continue to struggle with that. I'm struggling with it less, frankly, because I think we have a pretty good balance and a pretty good system and cadence going now, where I can enjoy doing both, you know, helping manage the Gunskins business as well as my corporate CFO job that I have. So that's what we were struggling with. And who knows, that could change as the business grows or changes or what have you. We'll see where that takes us. But in terms of transition, I would say, you know, we put a lot into due diligence. If I had it to do over again, I would probably be better dialed in on transition and really making sure that it was clear between the buyer and seller and sellers/buyers, employees or contractors, who was going to do what, when it was going to get done, and so forth. Because, you know, this isn't a small business. It's I'd say a medium-sized e-commerce business. We do about 20,000 orders a year through both our website and through Amazon. And there's a lot of moving parts, you know, that you got to get transitioned over. Simple stuff like making sure that your postage is going to the right credit card, making sure you've got Seller Central transitioned over, making sure that PayPal is set up correctly under your name, et cetera, et cetera. And I would say that, that's probably my lack or our lack of e-commerce experience that contributed to, you know, being a little less organized as it relates to the transmission. It was a case where we didn't necessarily know what we didn't know. And so I'd probably spend a little bit more time on that. It went fine. It was a little bit anxious for us because, you know, the light bulbs are starting to go on. You know, it's like, oh gosh, well, what about this? And what about that? And well, if we got to do this, don't we have to do this over here? And it ultimately was all seamless, but I wouldn't say it was stress-free. I mean, it was a lot of learning.
There's never a transaction like this that is stress-free. There's always a lot of emotion involved. And, you know, part of the purpose of doing recordings like this is to learn. So, look, we've been at this for almost 11 years as a brokerage firm, and we don't have a transition checklist that should probably or could probably help ease those nerves a little bit. So it sounds like maybe what we can do as a brokerage firm is to have the seller create, and we do this, but it's not very formal, a complete list. This is in the asset purchase agreement, of course, but a list perhaps in Google Sheets of every item that is going to transfer. And during the transition period, you're going to check each box and show that you've got complete control of it before the asset, before the funds are released. That is the way it works, folks. You know, Rick wires funds into escrow. Kevin transfers all of the assets over to Rick's control. And once Rick has control of all of those assets, he informs escrow, the escrow agent, and they release the funds. But we could formalize that process a little bit. But it will never, I'm sorry, be stress-free and emotion-free. That's the biggest challenge in these transactions. Just, it's a big deal. You're making a big life-changing investment, putting your hard-earned money, your 401k money on the line, and you want to make sure you get it right. So we work hard to make sure it's stress-free, but obviously it's not always and cannot always be that way.
Correct. And the other thing I would just add to that, Joe, is that with a size like this one was, it's unrealistic to think that you're going to fund escrow, transition all these assets over and accounts over in 24 hours and be done. It simply takes longer than that. And part of it is out of the control of both buyer and seller. You're dealing with the different tools and resources and platforms that the company is using out there. And it takes time for those folks sometimes to work through their process of transitioning that to a new owner.
Yeah. And that's part of the process. And that's why, regardless of the size of the deal, I want escrow in the middle. I want that money that you've invested safely, with an escrow agent, and for your seller to know that as he transfers control over all the assets, that his money is safely, which is his future money, is safely in escrow as well. Let's talk a little bit about, if you had to do it over again, what would you do different? This business, as you say, was mid-size. Is it big enough to support you financially so that you can quit the corporate world and never go back? And if it's not, do you think maybe in hindsight you would have held off and tried to buy something bigger? Or are you really happy with the decision and purchase that you made?
Yeah, no, that's a good topic. And I'll go back to some rules we operated under in the corporate finance world. Acquisitions in the corporate world, and we always said that the smaller deals take just as much time and are just as hard to work, if not harder, than the larger deals. And it's absolutely true. It's something I've always found to be true. And so I would say that my advice would be, look, do something that is going to be meaningful to you. And by meaningful, I mean that the investment is meaningful, the cash flow that the business is going to generate is meaningful, because, you know, if it's not, you know, I love playing poker, and sometimes you get in a poker game where the stakes are too low, and it sort of distorts the game, and people don't play the way they ought to play. It's kind of a similar analogy here, where put enough at risk so that it's meaningful to you. You're going to pay attention to it, and as it bears fruit, it's going to mean something to you, because you're going to work hard on it. It's not, you know, there's no free lunch. You're going to put, you know, blood, sweat, and tears into it. Make sure it's going to be meaningful when it comes out the other side.
Yeah.
So for us, you know, the dollars that we invested out of our retirement savings were absolutely meaningful. They're significant. They're dollars that I don't want to lose. And, right. And moreover, the cash flow that this business generates is meaningful. It's, it has the potential to equal or exceed my earnings as a corporate CFO. And the other thing, tying back into what we were talking about earlier, is what you find is that when you start looking at the larger businesses, they generally have a better foundation.
Right.
You could get into an e-commerce business on the cheap, but I think the probability of getting into one that has a strong foundation like the one that we have at Gunskins has is low. It's lower, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Lower. You got to be a lot more careful, and you run a higher risk that when you start getting into the actual processes, how the business is put together, maybe even the integrity of the seller, you know, you just, it's a little messier in my experience.
Yeah, for sure. There's no question. And that's why, you know, the multiples go up, the larger the business. When you get into $900,000, $1 million in discretionary earnings, it's a larger, more well-established business. And therefore, as Rick just said, it's lower risk. With lower risk, the multiple goes up. Smaller businesses, lower multiple, because there is more risk, without question. Rick, let's talk, running a little short on time, but I want to talk about what types of things you thought you were going to be doing with Gunskins in terms of marketing channels that worked or didn't work, what surprises there were. And hey, Ben, we got an audience of both buyers and sellers, and there's people out there that are e-commerce experts that may be able to point you in the right direction in terms of getting this marketed in certain places. So let's talk about what worked and what didn't, and what you're hoping to achieve in terms of marketing channels with the business.
Sure. So I would say, you know, going into the acquisition and early on in the transition, I was absolutely convinced that we needed to aggressively build out our dealer channel, our brick and mortar dealer channel, not necessarily e-commerce stores, but brick and mortar dealers like gun dealers, pawn shops, et cetera. There's thousands of them across the country. I thought, well, maybe we take a look at big retail as well, big box retail. I wasn't as convinced in that, but I was convinced on the gun dealerships and that we needed to invest time in building that out. And I'll tell you, and this is, again, what I learned pretty quickly is that to build out a dealer network, a dealer channel through, you know, brick and mortar stores is labor intensive, labor and cost intensive, in a very large way. It takes a lot of boots on the ground. to go and knock on all those doors and try and sell that product. And what I learned was, you know, the cost per conversion on e-commerce is so attractive. It's so incredibly attractive compared to other sales channels. And if you can build your scale and build your brand through e-commerce, the dealers will come to you, at least in our case, in our business.
They are finding you now. You're not going out and getting them. You
absolutely
diverted from that. They're finding you.
Absolutely. I mean, we love our dealers, but I think investing a lot of time and money in trying to grow that channel on its own is a little bit silly. And it surprised me because I didn't think that going in. Where we spend our effort is really reinforcing and building our brand awareness and product awareness online through social media, through, you know, Google AdWords, et cetera, through Amazon, et cetera, blog posts and the like. And what we find is people hear about us, dealers in particular, and they come to us. Even some of the online distributors, very well-known online stores for guns and guns accessories, have reached out to us and say, hey, we'd like to talk to you about, you know, distributing your product on our site.
Excellent.
And that's the way to build a dealer channel for our business. You can't go out there and put enough boots on the ground to do it otherwise.
Excellent. One last question. We talked about staffing very, very briefly, but there were two VAs, I believe, or virtual assistants or remote contractors. You're here in North Carolina, where I am, and I believe they're both out west, or were out west. Are both of the individuals that were working for Kevin still working for you?
No, one of them is, one of them is not. The gentleman who's continuing with us, we call him, but really he's a lot more than that. He handles.
You broke up there. Say that one more time for me. What do you call him? Your what?
Our graphics genius.
Your graphics genius. Okay. I like that title.
It really doesn't do him justice, to be honest, because not only is he our graphics design guy for our patterns and so forth, but he also handles a lot of the e-commerce side of things as well, our website and Shopify and Amazon, et cetera. He's invaluable. And he probably puts in maybe 20 hours a week, something like that.
And okay.
So he's continuing. The other VA that Kevin had handled customer service and social media. And we've picked that up on our side. My son, believe it or not, my 14-year-old son does a fair amount on the customer service side, answering customer questions and so
Excellent.
Forth. And this, again, goes back to the tools and platforms available to e-commerce businesses. We use Zendesk on the customer service side. It's spectacular. I mean, it makes it so easy. And so he's enjoying doing that, making a little bit of money.
That's great. I have to tell a brief story. I mean, in talking to Kevin, we listed this just before the holidays in 2016, right? I forget. Yeah. Just before the holidays. And, you know, the customer service person was Kevin's brother, who he loves dearly. And here I am going, man, you are so overpaying a relative. It's crazy what he was paying him. I'm like, you need to fire him just before the holidays. And he didn't fire him, but because it was logical, and we used logic and math, and we made an adjustment in the profit and loss statement for really still overpaying a virtual assistant. You know, we made the cost of a VA probably twice what it would normally cost and put that in as the cost and made the adjustment. Full disclosure, put that in black and white, right in the package. But he did stick with you for a while, and you eventually took it in-house, which is great because you're saving money on the bottom line and teaching your son some business skills as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great guy, by the way, and was doing great work and was very flexible with us on the transition. And so, yeah, ultimately we took that over after about 3 months, I think it was, and it takes probably 20 minutes a day, something
wow.
like that.
Yeah, no, okay. So he was even more overpaid than I thought. If he's anything like Kevin, he is a great guy. Kevin spoke very highly of him, and I know he did a good job. And the transition and training period, Kevin and he worked it out, and you worked it out so that he was there for you, because the last thing you want to do is have to jump in and take over the role of a contractor when that is not what you're intending to do. So
yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, making sure your seller, you know, is trustworthy and is operating with high integrity. And Kevin, I can't say enough about, as he's an outstanding guy, and you know, he did things and handled himself in such a way. He cared about the business. He cared about our success in taking on that business, and that makes a big difference. He didn't have to be as cooperative as he was, but that's just who he is. And that makes a difference.
Without a doubt. We'll try to get Kevin on the podcast as part of the Incredible Exits series.
Yeah.
Instead of just the Incredible Acquisitions. Well, listen, man, I'm so happy that you bought Gunskins. I'm excited for you. I'm excited maybe to have you on again as an update and talk about where you were able to take it. You've had it for about a year now. Maybe we can do it again in another year. Any last thoughts, any last advice or suggestions you can give people that are considering selling their business and what they should do do differently than what you normally see, or anybody that's buying a business, and last minute thoughts for them?
That's great. I mean, for sellers, you know, we've touched on it a bit through our discussion, but really have yourself organized, have your processes documented. There's great tools out there that you can use to document your processes. Also have your financials put together. Both my wife and I are CPAs. We use a partner in CapForge bookkeeping. So you're out in Carlsbad, California. They use QuickBooks, and they are e-commerce experts. I don't know how they make money, with what we're paying them, but that is money well spent, because they
clarify. And let me just interrupt and point this out. Now, I'm pounding my desk, people. We have two CPAs who own the business, and they still hire an e-commerce bookkeeper. Please, folks, please do what Rick is doing and get your books in good order. Okay, I'll stop pounding my desk.
No, I agree. It's cheap, and they do work. When you go to exit, you're going to have, you know, all your ducks in a row, and Joe's going to be very happy. You won't have to recreate your financials on an Excel spreadsheet.
And you'll get more money.
Yeah,
you'll get more money. Good books instill confidence in buyers, and confidence increases the value and the valuation and the multiple. So without a doubt. Well, Rick, if anybody has a great idea and wants to reach out to you, how would they find you?
Right through the Gunskins site, support@gunskins.com, and that email us as owners, and we answer every inquiry we get.
Awesome. Awesome. And for everybody out there that is a hunter or owns a gun of any kind, please go to gunskins.com. Check it out. Go to the YouTube site. You'll get to see the before and afters of lots of different guns. The wraps are very, very cool. Camouflage wraps, different seasons for camouflage, and even just, the American flag and things of that nature, if you want to spice it up a bit. Or if you're a female and hunting, I think there's even some wraps for females too, right, Rick?
We're going to be launching some great ones here in the next 30 days. We're launching real tree patterns, and those include, there's a Tiffany blue camouflage pattern popular with women, as well as we have Paradise Pink for launching with them as well. But yeah, there's something for everybody. Also visit our Facebook page. We've got over 70,000 Facebook followers, and we'd love to count each one of the listeners as a follower as well.
Fantastic. Rick, thank you for your time. Thanks for being a professional. I look forward to having you back on the show to talk about maybe your incredible exit someday.
Absolutely. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Quiet Light Podcast. For more resources from this episode, head over to quietlightbrokerage.com. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review in iTunes. This helps share the messages from the show with more business owners like you.